A note before we begin. We at A Touch of Hysteria are not doctors. If you have concerns about your health, talk to your primary care physician. Our hope is that by listening to these episodes, you can have better conversations with your doctor. Now, here's the show. This is A Touch of Hysteria, a podcast that uncovers the myth of hysteria for women and their bodies. I'm Anne Kane, and welcome to the show. Have you ever gone to the doctor's office with concerns? Maybe chest pains or fatigue, maybe a fever that won't go away. What was that like for you? Did your doctor listen to you, give tests, find out what was going on? I hope so. But for many women, going to the doctor can be a recipe for neglect. Their concerns and symptoms are dismissed. For a long time, women were even called hysterical or told they were showing symptoms of hysteria. The word hysteria actually comes from the word hystera, the Greek word for uterus. And by the early 20th century, hysteria was considered a mental illness almost exclusively applied to women. It became a catch-all diagnosis for unexplained and misunderstood symptoms.
No, I'm not hysterical.
She was in hysterics 3 minutes ago, doctor.
The girl in hysterics.
They all say I'm hysterical.
Today, you might not be called hysterical when you visit your doctor's office, but you might hear the words anxious, hormonal, or stressed. On A Touch of Hysteria, we're uncovering how gender bias shows up in our medical care today. So the next time you go to your doctor's office, you have the knowledge to advocate for yourself or your loved ones. In this episode, we're tackling the number one killer of women, heart disease.
How are you?
Good, how are you doing?
Today, I want to introduce you to Charity Watkins.
No shoes.
My producer Mary and I met up with Charity at her home in North Carolina. The walls of her home office are covered in artwork and inspirational quotes focused on empowering Black women.
Now, I have a workspace upstairs that we can sit at.
Her degrees are prominently displayed from her undergrad to her PhD in social work. And pictures of her husband and daughter, Margot, sit on her desk. But looking around the home Charity and her family have built together, you might not realize how fragile it all was 7 years ago when Charity nearly lost her life to heart disease right after she gave birth to her daughter.
I know, I've been having enough time and it's no point because the whole day I'll be gone.
Okay. Would you like to record here or in our office with more space? It's up to you.
I think this is fine.
According to the American Heart Association, 45% of women 20 years or older are living with some form of heart disease. Heart disease kills more women than all forms of cancer combined. It's also the number one killer of new mothers. You would think, being the leading cause of death among women, going to the doctor with heart disease symptoms would get some attention. But that doesn't always happen. In fact, Charity didn't get a diagnosis until it was almost too late.
I usually start from the beginning, right when we found out we were pregnant.
In 2015, Charity was studying for her PhD in social work from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And her husband had just finished his PhD when they found out they were pregnant with their first child.
So here we are, two young Black millennials pursuing the dream of getting PhDs and setting ourselves up for our lives together and now being able to start a family.
Charity approached her pregnancy the same way she approached her professional work.
I went to my prenatal visits regularly, asked questions, did a lot of reading, of course, had what to expect when you were expecting, had all of the reading materials, went to birthing classes. Like, my role as a researcher was not only professional, it was personal. And so that's how we approached it.
Charity says her pregnancy was pretty uneventful. She was diagnosed with gestational diabetes, but was able to manage without medication. Going into her third trimester, she noticed that she was getting short of breath. Other than that, things went smoothly. But the birth was a bit more traumatic. Margot was 10 days late, and Charity had an unplanned C-section.
And I'm not sure how that decision was made and how maybe my identity, I've learned over time how Black women are oftentimes overrepresented in terms of cesarean deliveries, how that may have also played a part in my delivery.
After the birth, Charity was sent home and settled into being a new mother. But once at home, Charity started feeling tired. She struggled to take deep breaths and she was out of breath going upstairs. It kept getting worse. She called her OBGYN to tell her that something wasn't right. The doctor told her that she may have the flu, But that didn't sit well with Charity. She had the vaccine, and this didn't feel like the flu. This felt different.
But again, this was my first pregnancy, and I was listening to the doctor. She had more experience with births than I did. And so I just assumed that she knew what she was talking about, even though I never was tested for the flu.
Charity's symptoms did not improve.
I had this nagging cough that wouldn't go away. I started to feel nauseous. I remember, like, I see the image in my head of me coming upstairs with my daughter in my hands, and my husband's right at the top of the stairs, and I'm like trying to pass her to him because I feel so tired, and he worried that I was going to drop her at that very moment.
At her 6-week checkup, she explained her symptoms to her doctor again: fatigue, nausea, struggling to breathe deeply, and a persistent cough.
And so she said, well, maybe you're experiencing postpartum depression. And I'm a mental health professional. I had a sense of what depression looked like and even what it looked like for me. And I'm like, it doesn't usually manifest in these kind of physical symptoms. I'm not sure if that's it, but maybe it is. I am not feeling my best.
Even though she had doubts, Charity decided to go to the counseling sessions anyway. While she was able to talk through how she was feeling, her physical symptoms didn't go away. Then, one evening, 2 months after Margo was born, Charity was in bed pumping and watching TV. She started feeling a throbbing pain in her arm that lasted about 10 minutes. She thought that maybe it could be a muscle spasm triggered by the pumping. But 2 days later, it came back. And this time, it was more painful and it lasted longer.
And so that's what triggered me going to the ER, asking my husband to drive me to the ER because I worried I was having a heart attack.
Both of Charity's parents had experienced heart failure, and her mother had suffered a heart attack in the past. So Charity knew the symptoms, and she knew something wasn't right. She checked into the ER, went through triage, and explained her symptoms. She told them she had just given birth a couple of months before. They did an EKG and then sent her back to the waiting room. And Charity waited for 5.5 hours.
And here I am, a new mother. I am breastfeeding. I need to get home to my infant now. Like, I only can stay here for so long. And so I said, you know what? We're going to have to go because I literally physically cannot continue to sit here and wait for someone to take my symptoms seriously.
And what were you feeling then? Like, to be there thinking maybe this was a heart attack and then to think, well, I have to go home.
I was scared out my mind that, you know, maybe the next night I went to bed that I wouldn't wake up. Would I have a heart attack while my husband was at work? You know, something massive. Would this be the moment, because I can't continue to wait without any sense of getting care, would this be the moment when I lose my life?
So Charity went home. She decided to make an appointment with a doctor on her campus. Not her OB, but a different doctor. She went in a few days later, and this time things were very different.
He listened. He heard my symptoms. He did a physical exam. He ordered an X-ray of my chest. I remember laying on the table and it was hard to lay down because I couldn't lay flat. And he said, I don't think you're going home today because your X-ray revealed that you have an enlarged heart.
The doctor immediately sent her to the ER, the same ER she had been to just a few days before.
And they literally rolled me down to the ER in a wheelchair. And I'm not thinking that I'm going to stay overnight because I've never been admitted into the hospital other than to give birth. I'm worried about my car and parking and making sure my car doesn't get towed. Like, that's what I was concerned about. And I wasn't processing the fact that he told me that my heart was enlarged. As a 30-year-old woman who overall was healthy, now I'm worried about this vital organ in my body and whether it's going to withstand the trauma that it was currently under.
This time, Charity was admitted to the cardiac intensive care unit. She was ultimately diagnosed with peripartum cardiomyopathy or pregnancy-related heart failure. She stayed in the hospital for 2 weeks, and her daughter Margo was only 2 months old.
My cardiologist, she tells me often, pretty much every checkup I have, she's like, oh, yeah, we were close to losing you. My heart was functioning at only around 5 to 10% at that time. And she said it could have been just a matter of days that I would have lost my life. And I'm just like, it sometimes hits me where it was just a matter of if an appointment was open, that I could have lost my life. And then my daughter could have lost her mom. And my husband could have lost his wife. Like, just if an appointment wasn't available.
In listening to Charity's story, it struck me that even though she had many of the signs of heart failure, fatigue, shortness of breath, swelling, pain in her arm, and a history of heart disease on both sides of her family, she still wasn't taken seriously by the medical professionals who were caring for her. I want to make a note here about what heart disease or cardiovascular disease actually is. Heart disease refers to a group of problems that affect the heart and the blood vessels. You could think of your heart as the city center, and the blood vessels as the roads and highways that bring supplies to and from. If there's a problem in the city center or on any of the roads and highways connected to it, that is heart disease. Charity's particular diagnosis is rare, but her experience is far from it. Delayed and misdiagnosis of heart disease is a problem many women face. But if heart disease is the number one killer of women, with over 300,000 women dying in 2021, why is there such a delay in getting women a diagnosis? To answer this question, I spoke with Dr. Martha Gulati. She's a cardiologist at Cedars-Sinai Hospital and the associate director of the Barbra Streisand Women's Heart Center in Los Angeles, California. I asked her why so many women are dying from heart disease in the first place. Dr. Gulati told me it's a complicated question, and there are many reasons. But a lot of it has to do with gender bias in medical care.
How aggressively we treat a woman is different than how aggressively we treat men. But then there's also this variable that affects women, and in cardiovascular disease particularly, we have not enrolled enough women or people of color, so it makes it very hard for us to actually accurately treat women when we've excluded them from the majority of our research.
Dr. Gulati says that bias also plays a part in why women are so often misdiagnosed.
To me, it's a reflection of society. We live in a society where men are taken seriously and women aren't. Again, medicine has been run predominantly by men, and women's symptoms are not taken seriously in the same way as men.
Dr. Gulati says she sees this a lot in the cardiology community.
I kind of joke about this. You know, men will go to an emergency room and, you know, they'll have a nail in their hand. Clearly, we know what's wrong with them. And, you know, but yet, in addition to removing the nail or whatever crazy thing they did to themselves, they might mention some chest discomfort or something. They'll get an EKG. Like, they don't even have to scream for an EKG. A woman can come in with the symptoms that everyone recognizes would be clearly a symptom of a heart attack, and women do not get treated in the same way.
Dr. Gulati highlighted something here that I found interesting. She says that women aren't taken seriously even when they go to the emergency room with symptoms that are commonly recognized as heart attack symptoms. But heart attack symptoms are heart attack symptoms, right? Turns out there's some debate about whether or not women and men experience the same symptoms when having a heart attack. If you Google it, you'll likely find women's symptoms are characterized as atypical. So could this be a reason women are misdiagnosed?
Women are not small men, and women have unique ways of presenting for any condition. But I actually think there's more similarities than differences.
Dr. Gulati cited a study called the Virgo Trial that looked at men and women under the age of 55 who had had a heart attack. The study found that 90% of men and 90% of women reported the same symptom, chest pain or chest discomfort. But there was one interesting difference.
Women tended to report three or more accompanying symptoms. So chest pain was there, but so were other symptoms. But I also would say women are better at describing things because, again, I think they're more in touch with changes.
The study also asked participants if they had seen a doctor about their symptoms before they had the heart attack.
And actually, more women than men actually saw a doctor beforehand. And more women compared to men were told that their symptoms were not cardiac. Remember, every one of them went on to have a heart attack. So again, that just tells you about the bias, the gender bias that exists in medicine.
So for women, even if their symptoms are the same as men, a doctor might not recognize them as symptoms of heart disease. A large part of this goes back to Dr. Gulati's point about the lack of women's research. Without specific research into how heart disease affects women, there's a gap in knowledge. We need more studies to address the risk factors that are specific to women. Women are affected by the traditional risk factors associated with heart disease, like high blood pressure, diabetes, and a family history of heart disease. But there are ways women are uniquely at risk. What age you start your periods, if you've been pregnant, what your pregnancy was like, premature menopause. These are all factors that can put you at greater risk for developing heart disease in the future. Then there are sex-specific differences at play, things that aren't unique to women, but impact them differently than men. Let's take diabetes. If you have diabetes as a woman, you're more likely to develop heart disease than a man who has diabetes. Why?
It may be that the underlying disease, diabetes, affects the vascular system in women differently than men. But also there's a difference in how aggressively we control diabetes in women compared to men.
Even having breast cancer can increase your risk of developing heart disease. Although it's not sex specific, it occurs more frequently in women. And how breast cancer is treated can accelerate cardiovascular disease.
Survival rates are the highest they've ever been, but the therapies of breast cancer are making heart disease the leading killer of women with breast cancer.
It's clear that women have a number of factors working against them when it comes to heart disease. So what do we do with this information and Charity's story? Where's the hope? What can we do to change this? Dr. Gulati believes the cardiology community at large needs to change, from how doctors interact and listen to patients to who's in the room.
We need to change education, but we need more women in medicine and women in these specialties, because I think women physicians tend to do more appropriate testing in other women. And if we are more present in the medical community, we'll change things.
But if you're like me, you may not be planning to get a medical degree anytime soon. So what can we do when we walk into the doctor's office? Talking about the heart is an important first step.
I hate the fact that women need to be empowered to ensure they get the correct care. But given the society that we live in, unfortunately, to some degree, I want women to be empowered so that they get the right care. So I think that for every woman, regardless of age, there's no age too young to talk about cardiovascular risk, heart disease risk.
And that's just what Charity Watkins is doing with her daughter, Margot.
Like, those are her bedtime stories. And so I've told her on many instances about her birth story, you know, how happy we were. I told her about, you know, going into the hospital, and I've showed her the picture that I had of holding her. And so, you know, she's very aware of that. And that's also a part of my advocacy, too. And so, you know, from a very early age, she's 7 years old, but she knows that at some point, she may have to advocate for herself in her health care.
So I remember keeping things of hers.
The shoebox.
Yeah, can I grab it?
That was your baby box.
Oh, this is your baby box.
No, that was yours.
This is yours.
When we visited Charity in her North Carolina home, she showed us Margo's room. Charity took down Margo's baby box from the closet, and the two of them told the story of Margo's birth together.
Okay. So you remember what I've told you about when you were born? Can you tell your own birth story?
I don't know what's going to happen.
But do you remember some of what I've told you at night?
She woke up one morning. She took a test. And then she took a test. And then it was positive. Yeah. And then she called the doctor and daddy.
Do you remember what I told you about my heart?
No.
You don't remember?
Yeah, she had a heart attack.
And heart failure.
Today, Charity is doing well, but she's reminded every day of how lucky she is to be alive.
Luckily, I'm a case of maternal morbidity versus maternal mortality. And it sits with me every day. It's with me at all points. It's with me in my work. It's with me with my family. It's with me when I'm by myself. I would never forget that experience. I would never take it for granted, and I would never not want to talk about it with others in order to hopefully prevent someone from having the same story.
So I want to leave you with some practical advice so that hopefully you don't have to go through the same experience. Here are a few things that you can do to self-advocate and take care of yourself and your loved ones. Ask for tests to be done. If you think you're having a heart attack and you don't think your doctor is listening to you, ask your doctor specifically, "Have you checked my heart? How do we know this isn't a heart attack?" Hopefully, at the very least, that will trigger a physician to give you an EKG and do blood work to make sure you're not having a heart attack. Know your numbers and track them over time. It's not enough to know that your blood pressure is normal. Know exactly what that means for you because it will change over time. If you take normal at face value, you may not notice the steady increase as you get older. Same with cholesterol. Don't be afraid to get a second opinion. If someone isn't taking your symptoms seriously, find a new doctor. You need to find someone who listens to you, hears you, and responds to you. And of course, the best thing we can do for our hearts is to try to prevent heart disease in the first place. We can do this by lifestyle changes, big and small. Quit smoking. Smoking is one of the leading causes of cardiovascular disease. And sorry to say, it's worse for women. A woman and a man could smoke the same number of cigarettes, but the vascular damage and risk to the heart is greater for women. Move more. Sure, you can exercise and try to hit those 10,000 steps a day, but even going from 0 to 1,000 steps a day makes a difference. A little bit of movement is better than no movement. So as you go through your day, try to move a little more and sit a little less. Make your diet more heart-friendly. Fruits and vegetables have natural antioxidants. You could switch to a Mediterranean diet, but you could also start small. If you do just one thing differently, add another vegetable to your day. And I'll leave the last word to Charity.
Trust yourself. Trust your body. If something is not feeling well, you live in your body every day, 24/7. Someone who only sees you every year or maybe a couple times a year isn't going to know your body like you do. So stand on that and ask for what you need, no matter what.
Thank you for listening to A Touch of Hysteria. If you like the show or learn something new, make sure to tell a friend. You can find the show on socials at A Touch of Hysteria. Special thanks to Charity Watkins for sharing her story with us, and thank you to Dr. Martha Kuvlati for speaking with us. This episode was produced in partnership with JAR Audio, and I want to thank Jen Moss, Tori Weldon, Jessica Wills, and Sam Seguin for their support in putting this episode together. A Touch of Hysteria is produced by Mary Heisey, edited by Kamina Shastri, and engineered by Sam Seguin. And Hannah Hunter is our social media producer. I'm Ann Kane. Thank you for listening, and take care.